Welcome to Solarpunk Presents, Season 5, Episode 2, in which Ariel talks with the podcasters behind the solar scene, who are trying to inspire us to usher in a wonderful, sunny, beautiful new world. Hi, listeners, and welcome to another episode of Solarpunk Presents podcast. Today, I am joined by Alicia and Aaron of the Solar Scene podcast, and I'm excited to talk to them all about what they have been up to and what they're hoping to do in the future. Alicia and Aaron, could you introduce yourselves?
For sure. Hi, everyone. I'm Alicia. I am the co-host and co-owner of Solar Scene. I studied sustainability in university, and now I'm more of a designer and podcaster.
Hi, everyone. I'm Aaron. I'm also a co-host who also studied environmental science in university, and I'm also an aspiring novelist currently in the process of publishing my first kind of fantasy romance epic, and that informs a lot of what I talk about on the podcast as well.
That sounds super cool. But why don't you tell me a little bit about Solar Scene? What is it and how did it come about?
So Solar Scene came about in its first form about 4 years ago when we were both still in our third year of university. We had this feeling that we weren't doing much. It was a lot of theory, as university tends to be, especially when you're not in a hands-on program. So we wanted to find a way to start applying what we were learning. And the very first seed of an idea was actually a clothing line, but that quickly went out the window because I learned about the industry and how bad it is for the planet. And instead of doing a clothing line, we pivoted to doing a podcast. Do you want to tell them about the first podcast?
Yeah, so the root of the Solar Scene podcast was actually, in its previous incarnation, it was called the Environmental Podcast. And it was entirely focused on climate change and kind of ecological sustainability. Over time, we kind of realized that what we wanted to talk about was a little bit broader. Almost every episode, I won't say devolved, but tended to result in us just discussing whatever topic at hand in a really idealized way. We found we were ending almost every episode with the question of, but what would this be like in an ideal world? Because we liked talking in that kind of platonic realm of perfect forms. Mm-hmm. And from that, I guess, more narrative or more like imaginative point of view, we pivoted into Solar Scene, which Alicia named. We really like the name of it. And it's kind of inspired by the naming of geological epochs, the current one being Holocene or Anthropocene, depending on kind of how you're viewing it. And we thought if there was a really, really, really perfect utopian one in the future where all of today's issues with climate and social sustainability were solved, what would that be called? And after a couple of days of brainstorming on a whiteboard, Alicia came up with the term Solar Scene, which is very sunny.
Yes.
I love it. It's so positive and, yeah, like you said, sunny.
Yeah.
So what are the aims of Solar Scene? So what are you trying to accomplish with the podcast?
We are trying to bring about change in a very tactile way. Mm-hmm. Our motto is beautiful, sustainable, tactile. And obviously right now we're working a lot in the internet realm, which is the opposite of tactile to us. It's quite two-dimensional. You can't interact with it on a fully human level, I find. So over time, we are working towards creating physical spaces and workshops, things that get people into this world of imagination. But today, so every week, the goal is to paint this picture of, for example, what fashion would look like in a beautiful future, but then wrap up the episode by pointing out a few things people could perhaps do to bring about the Solar Scene today.
Yeah, I guess to explain the podcast a little bit further, it's structured into seasons like a lot of different podcasts are. We call them semesters, and each one is kind of hyper-focused on a specific topic, which we can, over the course of 8 or 10 or 12 episodes, design as fully as we can for utopia. So like, for instance, we talked about the internet and we kind of asked the question over 12 weeks, what would a perfect internet look like? Or Alicia mentioned fashion. And right now we're kind of doing a Rushmore semester, which is a little bit of a different one, but each episode we're focusing on a different individual through history from whom we can take lessons for ourselves and for a utopia. So I guess in terms of specific aims, how we want people to feel when they listen to it is optimistic, inspired, creative, and even if they don't necessarily agree with our ideas for what would be perfect, they are kind of prompted to think in that way themselves.
Yeah, this is really where I feel like we started getting into the solar punk community. We realized with solar punk, and similar to degrowth, it's not prescribing this one thing because humans across the world are completely different. Like, even just climate-wise, like, it's not going to be the same solutions for everyone, let alone cultural and religious and so on. Every week we try and paint a picture, but yeah, of course, it's not going to be the same picture for everyone, but we try to create the space for people to do the thinking on their own. We also, as you were saying, it's like there's short form and long form content on the internet, but we're going for this like ultra long form up to 18 hours of podcasts on one subject. And
Wow.
it's kind of fun because we both are really working towards like a more sustainable internet usage within society. And so this is our little contribution to perhaps changing how people interact with the internet.
Yeah, I feel like if nothing else, we're making people tired of it. So they kind of are like, oh, 18 hours now. I need to go and touch grass. It's kind of weird.
That's the
Those are all extremely important aims.
goal.
And I mean, thinking about, what's the internet going to look like in this perfect Solocene utopia? That's something that I think a lot of people need to think about, especially with the advent of AI and all this kind of stuff. What's it going to end up being, and what's it going to end up looking like, and how are we going to end up using it? And these are all really good questions, and I'm so glad that your podcast exists to sort of bring those up and talk about them. I wanted to touch a little bit more on the clothing line. I went to your website and I saw that you provide upcycled clothing, which is really cool. And I wanted to ask you about why it's important to you to provide this upcycled clothing.
I'll defer to Alicia on this one because I can barely sew a button, so.
So the reason that I started the clothing line was to really practice what we were preaching on the podcast, as they say. It tries to embody the principles that we talk about. It was launched in partnership with our fashion semester. So normally we release a zine with each semester, but this one we went all out and just made a clothing line, but obviously it lives on past that semester. And so it was a good way to basically develop within myself a convivial skill, because up until this point, most skills within the education system are more intellectual, which can be convivial in their own way, meaning contributing to the development of your community. But with sewing, it has really, even in the ways of, I was saying, doing workshops, but also just with your friends, if they need something hemmed or repaired, you can do that for them. So that was a personal reason of doing it. But then also it is diverting waste from landfills. I can't imagine really using new materials because on the planet there already exists enough textiles to clothe about six generations in the future. So like we don't need to create more textiles. We can find cool ways to use it. And increasingly I'm looking more into using like smaller pieces of fabric because up until this point it's been larger. It's just a really fun way to, yeah, practice these principles of circularity and of degrowth and conviviality that we talk about every week and put it into practice. And even it's been a really great segue into the community by going to markets and these types of things, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to go tabling places if we're just selling a podcast, which is obviously free as it is. And then also the fun part of the clothes is it does then fund the podcast and the zines and like the educational side of things. So a whole little ecosystem going on.
That's so cool. And I didn't know that thing about there being enough textiles to clothe six generations of people. Holy cow.
Yeah.
That's wow. I mean, like, I knew there was a lot, but I didn't know it was that much. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I'm going to switch gears just a little bit here and ask you, what made you decide to do a visual format for your podcast on platforms like YouTube and TikTok?
Well, I guess we'll start by saying we didn't, it wasn't always visual. Like from the start, it was just audio. From the very start, like I think a lot of podcasters, we really cringed having to listen back to the audio because, like I think it's almost a universal experience. We really weren't fans of our own voices. So it took about, I don't know, 18 months to a year to become even comfortable with listening back so that we could edit and things like that. It's been and still is a similar experience on camera because I don't think it comes naturally to either of us really. And sometimes I'll be watching back the YouTube videos and I'll just see while Alicia's talking, I'm just doing something very strange with my hands or with my face because I have a kind of an awkwardness on camera that has been at least somewhat personally rewarding to see myself get over a little bit. So I guess from that kind of very personal point of view, it's been a good growth. And I think also just in terms of YouTube being the second largest search engine in the world, it felt like a good idea to have it on there. We're not really a big fan of social media in its kind of attention span reducing forms, the TikTok and the Instagram Reels. We've tried that in the past for a long time. And one, I don't think the podcast really lends itself to going viral in like a 30-second snippet, but also it doesn't feel like the best thing to be contributing to sometimes. But in terms of a long form, like our episodes are usually, I think, a similar length to yours. They're usually like half an hour or more, or like 45 minutes or so. It feels almost like we're making a mini movie each time, which I think is the way that we can phrase it to ourselves to feel a little bit better about it and more excited, I guess.
Yeah, and we from the very beginning have talked about the idea of making short films and eventually branching into more visual, because right now it's obviously visual in just the sense of you can see us, but making it like getting more footage and more video essay and eventually even narrative, having perhaps like actors and stuff, because we're both really huge film fans. That's a big part of our personalities, and our inspiration comes from film quite a lot. This is a first step into that world of editing and creating a visual story. And it's really fun. Like, I'm at a point where I'm really enjoying it, but the first year or so, it was definitely getting over just being on camera. I feel like even today, a lot of people from like the time they're probably young are recording themselves to like post online. And both of us were fortunately sheltered from that. So we never really developed that comfort. But then it also is translating into a general comfort speaking and being in the world.
Yeah, Alicia did her first public, kind of public speaking solo scene related gig. I'm going to call it a gig a couple of weeks ago. And then we have one in April as well. And it's like, it feels like good practice for that kind of community based speaking, I guess.
Yeah, I also didn't grow up being filmed, and so I also have that, like whenever I see myself on camera, I sort of cringe internally. I heavily relate to that, definitely. In the community, Solar Scene in the community, where do you mind my asking, where is Solar Scene based? And is it important that you're sort of part of that community, or are do you have your sights set on sort of a broader audience?
So this is a question that's been on our mind a lot recently because we're moving in a few months, unfortunately, but we're in Montreal and we've been in Montreal the whole time that we've been doing Solo Scene. We're not native here. We love the city. It's kind of ironic that it's a very Solo Scene city and it has a lot of the kind of energy that I think we try and foster on the podcast and also just like the solar punk aesthetic as a whole. You could imagine it really taking root here because there's a very lively kind of art scene and people seem very environmentally conscious and outdoorsy and just optimistic about things like that. But I also don't speak French. And Alicia, even though she's, I would say, bilingual, the podcast is still in English and our zines are still in English. So forging those kind of community roots has been maybe a little bit harder here than it could have been in other cities.
Yeah, like for example, the speaking engagement I did was all in French.
Yeah.
And so I'm not that comfortable publicly speaking in French yet. So our goal with our move is to move somewhere English speaking. But I think whenever we find a spot to really land down in, we're gonna dig in immediately because we didn't do that here. We, for about a year, I guess partially because of the pandemic, floated around and we're just digitally marketing the podcast, and that wasn't doing it for us, and it wasn't like working because I don't think the people who are interested in the project are really that online.
Yeah.
And so a lot of our promotion has come through just postering, which is so old fashioned, but it's how we've made all of these connections within the city. And as you said, yeah, Montreal is probably like the most solar punk city in North America. I mean, I might just claim that myself because it has the most extensive bike network. There's no exaggeration, a community garden on every corner. We
Nice.
live like facing this huge like reserve of nature that's in the middle of Montreal. For anyone who hasn't been here, it's called Mont-Royal. It's just a big green space and park. And oh my goodness, I'm just like so obsessed with Montreal. I think we'll definitely like be back for visits and markets and stuff in the future. But for now, we're going to take a little step away from it. But being a part of the community has been the most rewarding part of Solocene, because even as your community grows online, you don't know who it is. It could be kids following along. It could be like you don't actually know the faces behind like the usernames. They could even be bots. Like we just don't know who's actually listening to stuff. But when you meet someone, like you get an email saying, "Hey, I saw this poster on campus. Do you want to come to this event?" Then you know it's a real human. You can go meet them. And obviously, as it grows, you won't be able to meet every single person, but at this point, we've tried to basically have correspondence with like every listener via email or
Yeah,
something.
and it's still nice and in a different way exciting when you get an email or an order for clothes or a zine from Australia. Yeah, it's even more exciting when you kind of talk to people or recommend it to people. My personal goal in life, I think, is to just see someone in the wild listening to the podcast or reading a zine or wearing one of Alicia's clothes, and then I would say, "We made it. Hashtag we made
The other day, I saw someone
it."
wearing one of our scrunchies, and I was so excited. I was like that's because I had actually talked to the girl when I sold it to her, so like I recognized her and we chatted. But it was just so funny because it was the first little glimpse of Solocene in the wild. Like obviously, within this like 1 square kilometer, it's going to be much more likely to happen than anywhere else in the world. But it's still super fun.
Do you know where you're thinking of moving at this point, or do you have any plans?
One thing we really like about Montreal is the walkability of it, because we're both kind of, I won't say anti-car, but really, really anti-automobile. And we like to call them stink chariots. That's kind of our pet name on Solocene. So some other city which has that same kind of outdoorsiness and walkability as Montreal, while also retaining a kind of density and the kind of demographic who I think would be interested in Solocene. I'm originally from the UK, so that might be an option, but we're not exactly sure yet. Yeah.
Likely
Okay.
another like university town
Yeah, that's
is
a
the
nice thing
most
as
like
well.
important thing, I think, as it signals the demographic, and also we enjoy going onto campus and participating in events. Like there's a climate conference on a campus here next week that I'll be going to, and that's not going to just happen like anywhere. So
Yeah, it's nice to pretend like we're still students, and everyone just kind of takes us for undergrad, so it's a good feeling.
you're sort of automatically part of that community. Are there any topics that you really want your semesters to cover, but that you haven't yet? I was taking a peek at the semesters on YouTube, and I, like have listened to some on my podcatcher and stuff like that. Can you give us a sneak peek of maybe content that might be coming?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because we realized once we started, like, oh, these are kind of finite topics. Like, we will run out of these. Probably there won't be many more than like 15 or 16 different semesters, I think. And currently we're on wrapping up the seventh pretty much. So we still have time, but since everyone pretty much attempts to deal with a different sector of society that we'd be interested in, I think if we did an architecture semester in the future, or a community design one, or something really kind of concrete and infrastructural like that, it would really capture our own imaginations, because I tend to really be drawn to the visual designs that we do on the podcast, which sounds a little bit of an oxymoron because obviously it's an audio format, but I kind of like painting pictures with words like that.
That's you're a writer, so
Yeah.
it comes naturally. I am pretty set on doing a religion and ecology semester,
Yeah.
probably near the end of the podcast run. And then we also said once we run out of topics, we'll go back and retrospectively redo parts of the other ones, because obviously, just within sustainability, things change so rapidly.
Yeah, or
For
add on
sure.
to them, because we think about some of the old semesters like degrowth or education, and we said it was ultra long form and it's like 13 to 15 episodes on the same topic. But even then, like months or years later, obviously we change and we learn new things and we have new ideas and we think, oh, I wish I had mentioned that when we were designing an ideal education system. So we were like, we can just do that. So we'll probably just make episodes and reinsert them further back. Also, we still have this semester about people or biographies that we're detailing, and we're going to close it with an episode about Hayao Miyazaki, the director, because we're both massive Studio Ghibli fans, and that aesthetic has been a big inspiration for the Soul Scene. So, yeah, that's something that I guess we're looking forward to quite a bit.
Yeah, that might launch a little mini Studio Ghibli semester. So, like, for anyone listening who's really into Miyazaki and yeah, Ghibli, like, stay tuned for that because I'm beyond excited to talk about that because
Awesome.
those films just seriously changed my life. Like, as a climate activist, it was seeing like Nausicaä and Mononoke and everyone just like loving the earth and loving like their communities. It just, oh, it gets me.
Yeah, I think it's very solar punk, and it's one of the, I'll say, kind of like few solar punk examples I've seen in cinema or in like popular art, where it kind of embodies the ideals because it's showing you what could be in these futures, which very often have a kind of emptiness or melancholy to them, but they're also showing these pictures of like unity between a civilization and nature that's like in the news, you're just not going to see that because you'll just see people kind of criticizing or looking for answers or asking questions. But this is like, here are some at least aesthetic solutions.
I know that a lot of our listeners will be very interested in a Studio Ghibli focused semester. So thank you for sharing that. I do think like solar punk as a movement just draws so heavily on those images. And you're right, those positive portrayals of humanity and, you know, like non-human nature just working together and sort of putting aside differences or resolving those differences in a way that is sort of mutually beneficial for everyone involved. At least I think so.
It's also another idea that we had for a future semester is because it's always been weird to us how dominated by true crime the podcast industry or medium is. And it's always been a strange kind of like, it seems like the podcasting format could be used to cover almost everything, but then when you look at the top charts, they're almost always like stories about murders, real or fictional. So we were like, if we can kind of take that narrative desire and audience that people that already exists, obviously, and spin it into something a little bit more optimistic or inspiring, and maybe somehow telling stories about a future in even a more fictional way than we already do might be
Yeah,
an idea.
kind of like the Overstory, if you've ever read that. A similar vibe.
I
Yeah.
don't know that I have. Could you tell me what the overstory is?
Yeah, I highly recommend it. It's one of the few pieces of kind of climate fiction that are out there. There's like Ecotopia, and then there's the Overstory, and it's this fictional story following this set of activists. It's very Christopher Nolan in a way of it starts with these five paths and they start just interacting and there's time switches, but it's not fantastical at all. It's completely realistic and it's just really lovely. And it's a similar kind of true crime vibe of what Aaron was putting forward, but I like the idea of doing it optimistically because obviously our goal is to always like combat eco anxiety and combat the general malaise that I feel like, I mean, personally, I feel
Yeah.
when I am constantly inundated with climate news. This is a good way to put up a positive barrier between you and that you can then like kind of see the bad news through this lens.
Yeah, I'll just say that recording the podcast for like 45 minutes to an hour every week is pretty much my favorite 45 minutes to an hour every week because it's just a time where we can talk in a way that's sometimes silly, but always kind of smiley. So it's like you read the news or you keep up to date with what's kind of going on in the world, and it can be so easy to be inundated with negativity. And then we sit down and are like, what if everyone was walking around barefoot and you could like fly.
Yeah, and that positive ideation is so crucial
Yeah.
to being able to, actually do things in the present that will bring about a better world. Maybe not one where we can fly,
Yeah.
quite yet,
Yep.
but I mean, I won't rule it out of the realm of possibility either. Coming back to what you said about narrative, I wanted to ask you just a little bit about the zines. because I haven't had a chance to look through a zine or anything like that. Are they like you say you send one out or produce one for each semester, and what kind of things, if I had a zine, what kind of things could I expect to sort of see in it?
So it's a little bit of a mixed bag in that there's definitely a variety of different types of writings that we include. It can range from almost an academic essay to the point that we've considered using legitimate like MLA references before, and to like poems that I write or photos that we take or art or writing that we find from other people who maybe want to contribute. And obviously we always source them. I just think it's really fun to make these. We've both Alicia and I from a young age have had this kind of cut and paste infatuation with making little comics and little books and just tiny, you can't even call them publications, but small papery tokens of ourselves or our writings. And in the zines, we can kind of make those a bit more professional, clean, and adult while retaining the feel of like DIY. I guess like one of them, for instance, for our nature semester, it's almost narrative in that it's structured like a walk through the wilderness. So each page there is a tour guide who is our little dragonfly guy who Alicia drew, taking you through a different part of the ideal wilderness where you're going through like the sky and then you're seeing the mountains and a river and all that sort of thing. But then, for instance, in our degrowth scene, which necessitates a bit more of a serious tone, we're really writing from a kind of introductory tone.
Yeah, I think it's like those little pocketbooks you can buy in university bookstores. It's like
Yeah.
intro to
A
postmodernism,
brief
intro.
introduction to
Yeah.
X. Yeah.
So it was like that for Degrowth. And yeah, the Walk Through the Wilderness one is just so funny. It seems like the Beatles, like Yellow Submarine album is just like, what is going on
What were they
here?
doing? What were they doing for that period? Yeah.
Because apparently we sent one to our friend recently and they have a 5-year-old, and the 5-year-old apparently opened it up and like we put little inserts in them. Sometimes they're little posters. This one has a lot of inserts just because it's a little wacky. But there's like a leaf in it. And so the leaf fell out. And apparently he was like losing his mind. He was just so excited. He's like, there is a leaf in this book. And so we just try and, I mean, we both have like a pretty strong inner child. So like that one
Yeah.
in particular was really written towards our inner child. But then the other ones, yeah, are more towards introductory. Like the podcast part of there's so many reasons we started it, but part of it was trying to communicate to our media families like what we were learning in university and do so in a fun way.
Yeah, it's a physical manifestation of the podcast in a
Yeah.
lot of ways, but it's also, I wouldn't say it's made redundant by listening to the podcast because we write about things very differently from how you talk about them, and also it has a strong visual component, and it's tactile, which we really like.
Yeah, like
You
you have to rip it to open it.
yeah, we have
That's
a
why.
piece of tape on the spine that's like rip this to open because it
Ah.
kind of reminds you a little bit like you have hands that can maybe even get a paper cut if you're lucky. So
If you're lucky.
yeah,
Wow.
unlucky maybe.
I've never heard it in that context before. That's awesome, though. It's a way to remind people that they, in fact, do have a body. That's
Yeah.
great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think our disconnection from our body has like really contributed to the degradation of the planet. Obviously, it's a feedback loop. Like increasingly you don't want to go outside because the air is like trash to breathe, but then initially, perhaps like with the Industrial Revolution, as we separated from the Earth, it just, like it just kind of is a feedback. So that's, in our little ways, we want to like nudge people to remember that they have hands and stuff. Maybe we'll invent like a Kindle that can give you paper cuts. That'll be our big innovation.
Well, what an idea that is.
Wow, I mean, I can't imagine it, but
The
I have faith that you guys can come up with something. That's amazing.
Kindle paper cut, that's the pitch from this interview.
Yeah, instead of the Kindle Paperwhite, it's the Kindle paper cut.
Exactly.
I love it. So on your YouTube, you have a really interesting avatar. I wanted to talk to you and ask you about the significance, if any. It's a drawing of a pink city with a white bridge in front, and it looks super cheerful. I love it. It's your avatar, and it is like the sort of like main banner image. And yeah, could you talk to me about that?
Yeah, so that's our podcast graphic. It's pretty new. I think we only got it in January.
Yeah.
From the start, we had one that Alicia drew, which She did her best, but I'm not going to say it's the most professional art, what we had before this one. So at a certain point, we thought, I want something that really inspires the listener and kind of communicates the tone of, if nothing else, adventure and optimism that we try to embody in the solo scene or when we talk about it. So we found an artist called Simon Hinterman, who lives in Switzerland, and we really liked his style. And we kind of communicated that we wanted it to be a landscape with some kind of awe-inspiring, semi-fantastical, but also seemingly within reach city or structure in the middle of it. And we said some inspirations were like the Emerald City from The Wizard of Oz, or like Hogwarts, or something where people, you kind of know that it's not of the real world, but it's also dreamlike in a sense. Like it's an aspirational piece of architecture. Yeah, I think he drew it well. He kind of knew exactly what we were talking about.
Yeah, it was really great. It's funny because you and I mean, obviously you can get this from like we kind of joke sometimes with things being like super fantastical, but when it comes to aesthetics, like in the city we have these really like traditional wind turbines, and Simon, like, bless his heart, he was like, but those aren't like the best wind turbines. Like, there's these
Oh
better
yeah.
ones that you can use that like don't disturb birds. And
Bladeless
it's like,
ones.
yeah, it's like, of course, in the real world, like, bladeless ones are cool and better. But for like conveying a story, perhaps, like, a lot of people wouldn't recognize those, right? So it would be a niche group. So we decided to go with the traditional wind turbines. And it's a similar thing of the visual stories that we've been telling of trying to like communicate it. It's not real. We don't want a purple city. With like the white arch is kind of this motif that we've used throughout the whole of Soul Scene of like you picture a train going through there or pedestrians and it's like you're entering into
I think Disneyland was also another kind of
it.
another inspiration for the visual of it.
It's interesting because it's tough because especially within the solar punk world, I've found when you publish pieces of art like this, it gets like torn apart. It's like, well, this isn't actually real. It's like, well, of course. Like you don't see Picasso and you're like, well, the horse's knee isn't actually on its head. It's like, well, we know. Like it's trying to tell a story and convey a feeling. And I think it's important to have both types of art, like really realistic architectural or engineering renders and stuff are really cool and fun to look at. But with us, we always take that slightly fantastical touch flair to our to our storytelling.
Did you decide on the color for the city, or was that your artist's decision?
No, that was our decision. We had I guess it's a logo for the podcast, but it's more just our writing of it, like the way we write Solar Scene, and we just decided let's make it purple because that's a nice color and it seems vaguely futuristic while also kind of comfortable and exciting. So we were like, yeah, make it purple and it will contrast with the green environment, so it'll kind of pop.
Because it's like humans are never like the built environment is never going to be completely one with the natural environment. His original rendering of the image was in green and beige, which looked cool and but it didn't exactly like communicate what we were saying because we think we want to tell people that yeah, you're a part of the of nature, but also like you are making an impact no matter what you do. And I feel like the purple color contrasting with like the natural landscape.
It's also, in a sense, speaking to the distinction between technology and nature. Whereas if you had a kind of futuristic city that almost looked camouflaged in, then maybe that's a little bit different from what we are talking about on Solar Scene more often.
The different valences of images and their import is not something that I spend a lot of time thinking about. And so I'm really glad that you guys were able to sort of like bring that forward and tell us more about that. That's great. So thank you both so much for sitting down with me today. If our listeners wanted to find out more about Solar Scene, maybe order some awesome zines or some upcycled clothing, where would they go?
Yeah, they can go to our YouTube, which is just Solacene, Solacene, because sometimes, you know, it's a made-up word. It's hard to spell. We also have a website which you can get to through the YouTube, or it's just www.solacene.org.
Thank you again so much. Was there anything in the interview that you would like to talk about, or did I miss anything?
Yeah, I guess we could just mention, because I don't think we answered the origin of the podcast super well and how kind of campus inspired the whole thing was,
Oh yeah.
to where it was a really freeing and I think formative experience for us when we went to university, as it is for maybe a lot of people, but especially it's a strange thing to say, but even more than the actual classes that we were attending, it was the feeling of having this neat walkable place where there was a lot of greenery and a library where everybody worked together and cafeterias and not exactly a commune, but a more communal space than we were both used to. And we find a lot of infrastructure is centered around. And that was really the inspiration for calling our seasons semesters also,
Good
in
point.
that it's intended to be, I mean, it's not like a kind of, I don't like to think it's an arrogance where we feel we are teaching people because neither of us are experts in the classical sense about most of the things that we're talking about, but we feel that each week we are trying to study these things ourselves. Like we are the students and people are almost listening in on our note-taking and I guess tutorials that we're giving each other.
Yeah, I always forget about that, but that is a big part of it because now we fortunately live in basically a big campus that is Montreal, but most places in the world aren't don't have that feeling of community and shared spaces. But we're trying to perhaps bring that about sneakily with the podcast.
Sneaky.
That's a great endeavor, bringing that feeling into the wider world.
And that's a wrap for season 5, episode 2. I hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, support us on Patreon, and all that other kind of stuff that we need. We do need your support in order to keep going. Thank you. Also, it's really nice to know that somebody out there is listening. So let us know that you're listening. Thank you for listening to Solar Punk Presents, a podcast hosted and produced by Ariel Kroon and Christina Della Rocha.
The audio for this episode was recorded in part on the traditional territory of the Neutral, Haudenosaunee, and Anishinaabe peoples.
And in Germany. The opening and closing music for this podcast is Water Cooler Gang by Monkey Warhol, available for use under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.
Don't forget to support us on Patreon at patreon.com/solarpunkpresents.
Every little bit helps us keep bringing you discussions and interviews.
Until the next episode, keep dreaming.
And stay solarpunk.